I got something before we start the show that I want to share with you for this week that kind of was amazing. So I'm at the dentist, and don't worry, I'm not going to get too detailed about the dentist. I know that freaks some people out. I'm at the dentist, and I'm getting work done from, like, I had a high school football injury that the tooth repair had lasted 25 years, and then my dentist took a look at it and goes, well, that's about the end of that life. We're going to have to fix that. And so, again, back to my football days. Here we go, Brad. But anyway.
Yeah, I was picking up on that. All of your ailments go back to playing high school football.
Oh, I'm never letting my children play football. I lost a quadricep muscle. I lost like three molars. And the ones that survived got beat to shit. Anyway, so I'm at the dentist. And it turns out that my lower jaw, there's something weird about the way the nerve endings work, and it takes an incredibly large amount of anesthetic to numb my lower jaw. And this is how we found out. He gives me three shots of the anesthetic. He gives it about 10 minutes. He comes back in. He goes, all right, I think we're safe to start drilling. And he starts to drill. And literally, Brad, my left foot shot up in the air. Like 3 feet, just like almost a SpongeBob, just boing, where he hit a nerve, and I was like, oh, biscuits. I had no control over it.
It was like that nerve was just connected directly to your foot.
You know how, like, jokingly in like comedy movies when they like poke a brain, and like you can make somebody's eye twitch or you can make their hand wiggle when you poke their brain in different spots. That's exactly what this felt like. The dentist was like, "All right, well, we're just gonna start some light drilling." Foot just goes boing.
Oh my god! It's a good thing that needle wasn't a couple inches to the left. Now, was there anybody at the end of the chair that you might have kicked, or
no,
was it a clear zone?
No, thankfully, and I think maybe now that I'm thinking about it, maybe this is for a reason. The dental assistant was on one side and the dentist was on the other. But here's the thing: they have that little tray thingy that kind of swings in front of you.
Did you knock into that thing?
And I don't want to say that I missed it because I absolutely hit it.
And so now not only do you have the embarrassment of your foot jolting up, but now you've got all of his metal clanking hooks going all over the tray now that you've jostled it with your knee.
Exactly. And then in the meantime, in my mouth, I've got all these various cotton things. So then I have to go, I'm so sorry. I don't know what happened right there. And my dentist goes, wow, we only get one or two of those a year. That's pretty cool.
The bad news is your teeth are horrible. The good news is your reflexes are great.
Yeah, looks like you're doing great for a rabbit. Good job. Well, on that note, hello everybody and welcome to Comic Lab, the show about making comics.
And making a living from comics. I'm Brad Geiger, editor of webcomics.com and cartoonist of Evil Inc.
And I'm Dave Kellett, his friend and cartoonist of Drive and Sheldon and co-director of Strip.
And this week's Hour of Comics Advice is made possible by your support at patreon.com/comiclab. And Dave, let's start the show.
Let's dive right in, because Brad, we had a topic that came up at Patricon that we wanted to circle back around on, because I literally nudged you with the elbow and you said, oh, I've got thoughts. And so let's, like an old grandmother, oh, I've got thoughts.
I've got thoughts on that. Don't get me started.
Don't get me started in this forum. Not right now. Not like this. So,
not here. Not now. Not like this.
Not like this. So tell me about, give me the setting, Brad. Paint the picture for me of Brad and Dave Kellett.
Let me paint you a word picture here, Dave. Okay. We're sitting there in the audience, and they're talking about public-facing numbers on Patreon. And one of the people was sharing a story about how she had public-facing numbers, and the number had gotten her total dollar amount had gotten large, and she had a patron writer and say, I don't need to support you anymore. You're doing just fine. Right. I'm going to go support somebody else. And she said that kind of turned her off of the public-facing numbers on Patreon. And you tapped me on the shoulder because you and I have an ongoing argument about this. And you said, that's what I'm worried about. That's exactly what I'm worried about. And I said, I got thoughts. I got lots of thoughts, too many for right now. And so this is the time for us to have those thoughts. The question is,
go ahead. Can I pause you for a second, Brad?
Yeah.
Because the word picture that you painted was saying a tap on the shoulder. It wasn't a tap on the shoulder. It was a full rock rib elbow right to the midsection.
If I didn't have so much padding in that midsection, you would have hit bone. It was an elbow right to the ribs. Yeah, you're right. You're right. You were a little bit excited that somebody was making your point.
I was very excited to be like, Brad, this is what we're talking about. Brad.
Well, here's the point. And I've talked about this before, but I'm going to change my words because I think the words that I've chosen kind of block people from understanding what I'm talking about. And that is this.
That's how I feel about most of my conversations in life. I feel like the words I've chosen.
Maybe wasn't great. So I keep talking about a charity-based Patreon. Let's change that.
Okay.
Let's call it – you've got two types of approaches to Patreon. And to be honest, I think the best approach is a combination of both of these. But you're obviously going to lean more one way or another. So you've got on one side a support-based Patreon. That's where you're doing all of your work. You're making it free. You're putting it out there for people to see. And the people who support you are the people who appreciate that they're getting it for free and want to see that happening going forward. They want to be a part of that. And a support-based Patreon is going to work best in one of two cases where either A, you're playing just straight up numbers game. You've got so many backers that like 1% of them becoming supporters, or I'm sorry, you've got so many readers. They're not backers yet. You've got so many readers that if 1% of them become backers, you're doing great. You're playing the numbers game.
Right.
Or you've got a smaller audience, but they're really, really engaged. So more of them disproportionately become backers. That's on one side. On the other side is what I tend to favor, and that's the exclusive content model. And that's where you say, there's a certain amount of things that I'm putting out there for free, but there's a premium level that I'm making available only to Patreon backers, and that drives your backers to get that exclusive content. Now, obviously, I do both. I think that's the best, but you're going to lean one way or another. If you're doing a support-based Patreon, it's probably a good idea for you to hide your public-facing numbers because it's not pertinent. It's not important. The support is important. The total number isn't important. And you could have that situation where somebody does say, well, you're doing fine. I don't need to support you anymore. On the other hand, if you're doing a exclusive content Patreon, now that number is a selling point because part of the whole deal of exclusive content is that before you become a Patreon backer, you can't see it. So how do I know it's any good? Well, a large number is going, and as that number grows, you can keep pointing to it and say, hey, that number's going up, that number's going up. I did that regularly on social media when I started with this exclusive content. Hey, we're at this number. Now we're at that number. But that a large number for an exclusive content Patreon campaign becomes a mark of quality or a mark of, hey, there's a lot of people like this. Maybe I'll like it too. What do you think about that concept?
So I think that construction is good. I think you've nailed it, that there's basically a value exchange, which is the second one, and there's a donation one, which is the first one, right? And I think that's a smart construction. And I think you're right also that it is smart to pitch yourself with a mixture of both. Like, your support makes Evil Inc. possible. And also, because you're a valued member, here's all the things you're going to get. Like, that to me is the best pitch, you know?
Yeah.
It's a mix of one and two. But I also want to add to that something. It's just a reiteration of something we had shared before from PatriotCon that I think Jack Conte said, which is that you're not asking for a donation. You're merely supplying them the possibility to support. And I was like, oh, that's an interesting way to think about it.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, you'd mid-sip of water there. That was amazing. No, absolutely. You kind of mawed the French to that one. No, the French.
No, not only that, But, and this is why I wanted to point out that I've used the term charity in the past, and I want to stop that, because I think a lot of times what I see on Patreon that I don't like is that we use charity words a little bit overly much. In other words, saying thank you for your generosity is a good idea. But when we start to approach our Patreon like it's actually a charity, then I think we start to lose what's important about it, from no matter which one you're doing.
I think we lose sight of that. It's a value exchange. That's the thing.
Right.
Well, now, so let's get to your secondary point, which I think I still hold in dispute. So this is going to be a fun argument.
Okay. All right, everybody.
Mommy and daddy are going to fight everybody. So here we go. All right. So the idea of a public facing number, I am very willing to admit that it might be part of just my personality that I don't enjoy people seeing the number, right?
Yeah.
That's also possible. There's enough Irish Catholic guilt in me where I'm like, nope, nobody gets to see this number. But I also think that there is a tried and true marketing truism that people are less likely to crack open their wallet if they feel like an artist is doing fine. And so with Sheldon, I think I've kept my number public facing because Sheldon's Patreon numbers are like an asthmatic kid doing laps in PE, right? Like, and so I want people to support that asthmatic kid and like get that kid some albuterol. He's having some trouble. And then Drive, though, is doing great. It's like sprinting around. And so like, even though I want to have people pass Drive cups of water as it runs by, they're like, yeah, that Drive's doing fine. It doesn't need my cup of water. And so that's my concern, is that I feel like there is enough statistical truth to the fact that people won't jump in if they feel like it's already doing fine. Go ahead, tear me apart, Brad Geiger. I am waiting for it.
The only thing is that you, in saying that, you still don't understand exclusive content, because when people come to my Patreon, by and large, it's nothing to do with, do I want to support this artist? The question they're asking is, do I want this exclusive content? If I want the exclusive content, I'm going to pay for the exclusive content because I want it. And it doesn't matter whether this person is doing well or doing poorly. If I want to see the content, I'm going to pay for the content. It's a question of two different approaches.
You're saying that they're pulling up to a drive-thru and going, oh, I'd love that Big Mac. And you're going, well, that's $3. And then they pay you the $3 and they get a Big Mac.
Right.
And I'm saying, well, if they see how many billions of Big Macs have sold, they won't want to buy a Big Mac.
As a matter of fact, you're little word picture that you use there is perfect, because there's a reason that McDonald's puts right underneath the arches that there has been billions and billions served, because that's a mark of quality. There's a reason they put that out there. They don't hide that number.
I'm so glad that you approved of my word picture. I've always wanted you to approve of my word picture.
I don't know why word picture is on my mind as a phrase, but I think I'm going to be using it all day.
I feel like we're on picture pages or something. Do you remember Picture Pages? Picture Pages,
gonna do some Picture Pages.
Time to get along your paper and your pencil. Wow, two old guys singing about their youth, their lost youth.
I wanted one of those special pencils in the worst way. I'm so surprised they never marketed one. That was before everything was super marketed, you know? Everything was an advertisement. Bill Cosby had this really cool pencil that he would use for Picture Pages. I wanted one in the worst way.
Oh, I'm just realizing it's so tragic. Anytime you think of something from your youth and then you go, oh, right, Bill Cosby. Ah, geez.
Yeah.
And then you just get real sad.
then it turns out, you know, you can't even enjoy that anymore, because it's like, God only knows what else is going on over there.
Oh, God. Pages. All right. Well, anyway, so the good news, though, the big takeaway here, gang, is that Brad liked my word picture. That's what we need to focus on.
Yeah.
Brad was very pro word picture.
You're doing good. Yeah, you're painting a beautiful picture with your verbiage.
So I'm going to create more word pictures. So here we go. Yeah. So imagine Dave in this argument on top of a mountain holding a flag that says winner and Brad sitting on a rock about two-thirds of the way down, kind of like the thinker, you know, the brass cast of the thinker in Paris. And so that's the word picture I want to paint to you. Dave's waving the flag that says winner back and forth, and Brad's kind of thinking like Rodin down about two-thirds of the way down the mountain.
And Dave's up there on the mountain, and it's cold, and the wind is blowing, and he's got frostbite. And Brad's down there down at the nice, warm valley, drinking a mug of hot cocoa, thinking, enjoy your flag, frostbite feet, because I'm enjoying my hot cocoa.
Oh, but you know what? But Dave's at the top of this mountain, warmed by his own self-assuredness. So he's
but he doesn't
so
see the mountain goat sneaking up behind him with the big horns and the nasty look on his face.
But Dave kicks one tiny little pebble that starts a landslide heading towards Brad. Oh, this word picture is delightful.
Just one bad thing after another. We just both end up dead in this word picture. You realize that?
Yeah, I know. We're just basically escalating a war. All right. So how do we solve this? Whether or not to do a front-facing picture. You know what I'm realizing, too? We didn't necessarily explain for those not familiar with Patreon. So Patreon lets you show two sets of numbers. One is the number of patrons you have, say 100 patrons. And then the other is the number of dollar amount that those patrons bring you each month after all the fees. And so it's $500, say. So when you have 100 patrons and $500, you can choose to hide the dollar amount. And that's what Brad is advocating for. And so and that's what I'm advocating for. And Brad is saying, no, let them see your success, because frankly, you want them to see that this value is such a great deal that enough people will sign up to pay it. Do I summarize you correctly, Brad?
Yeah, and I think the answer to your question is you have to decide which way you're leaning towards more. Are you more a support-based Patreon, or are you more a exclusive content Patreon? If you're more support-based, I think that you're well within your rights to hide your dollar amount. If you're more of an exclusive content, I think that you should probably consider keeping that number public. And at the end of the day, the real definition is what are you comfortable with? If you're like Dave and you're like, nah, I'm not too comfortable sharing that information, then hide it and give yourself one less thing to worry about today, right? And if you're in it, but if you are comfortable sharing that number, then don't. And you're doing a exclusive content based Patreon, then don't give it a second thought.
Well, I think that's probably as good a summary as we're going to come to. Maybe what we've learned here today, maybe the real victory is the friends we made along the way, Brad. Maybe the real key takeaway that we've learned here is that I'm just very uncomfortable with displaying success. Don't you think
that much is absolutely true. you're uncomfortable with a lot of positive emotions, like the fact.
That's an amazing summary of me. Good job.
Oh, yeah. Look, I know that I can make you very uncomfortable if I talk about how much I value and treasure your friendship and how coming out to Los Angeles was in many ways the highlight socially of my entire year.
Like, I know what you're doing and it's still turning me red and wanting me to change the topic. And I know logically what you're doing, that you're just getting my goat. Oh, man.
I know. I'm getting that goat to push you off that mountain and into our next topic.
Here's what you're doing. I want to complete this word picture. As Brad is giving me these compliments, I'm very quickly shuffling down the mountain to go hide in an outhouse.
In an outhouse yet. What an ignominious fate.
Wow, that's Brad just won 10-cent word of the day. Good job, Brad.
I have even pronounced it right.
I think you did. I need a little like cowbell in this recording studio so that when you get the 10-cent word of the day, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great. I think we can put a button on that one. I think Brad, in all likelihood, Brad probably wins out on that argument, if I'm being fair about it, but I think my own insecurities win out for me, so I'm not changing what I'm doing.
Insecurities always win. went out.
Yeah, exactly. So let's move on to question number two. And this is a $5 backer, Brad, from patreon.com/comiclab. Those are the people that make the podcast happen. They make the equipment and the editing possible. And so we honor them with being able to ask questions on the show. And here is one of them. So Dave and Brad, I'm very curious to find out if a story-driven comic like a Bloom County can do well on the web nowadays. Brad, what do you think?
Oh, what a great question. And I think the answer is no.
Oh.
But I did not expect that.
Oh, all right.
In fact, I think it's a hard no, and I'll tell you why. But first, we've got to define some terms, because there's some wiggly terms here.
Okay, but before we define that, can we define the difference between a no and a hard no? What's a hard no?
You know exactly what a hard no is.
Is a hard no? Did the no have a few years in the Marines and a sergeant went to town on him? And
you've never heard that expression? That's a hard yes or that's a hard no?
I've heard like a hard pass, but I've never heard a hard no. I'm just sort of fascinated.
Maybe I'm misconjoining it.
Misconjoining it? Huh, geez. Now we're making it worse. I'm going to take back the cowbell for 10 cent word of the day.
Speaking of ignominious fates.
In your mind, what is the difference between a no and a hard no? Just the level of no-ness?
Hard no is mean I'm really, really confident that the answer is no.
Okay, that's fair. All right, so I'm sorry. Now let's get back to defining some other terms. I'm sorry about that.
Well, here's the deal. You've got a story-driven comic and you've got a straight-up gag comic where it's just a punchline.
Okay.
And I think a story-driven comic strip like Bloom County, and I'm not even sure Bloom County is a story-driven comic strip. So here's the real problem is the concept of story-driven.
Okay.
Because Calvin and Hobbes and Bloom County were not story-driven comic strips.
I would agree.
They had storylines, but the furthest that they could reach those storylines was like a week or so. And they might have had storylines that with common themes like Opus running for president that reoccurred. But the storyline never really developed in such a way that you've got to know what happened yesterday to understand today. And for me, that's a story-driven comic. There are plot points along the way that I've got to understand to know what's going on today.
Right.
And that's the key point to this. So there's two points. They're story driven, where I've got to know the plot to understand what's going on today. And there's the concept of a comic strip. And Bloom County's a comic strip. So I've got to assume that we're talking comic strips here. And story driven comic strips were possible in a newspaper sense. When newspapers ruled the media landscape for comics and particularly comic strips, when newspapers were the landscape, you could have a storyline-driven strip. You could have a story-driven and a storyline-driven strip, like Steve Canyon or Terry and the Pirates, which was a straight-up story adventure strip you could do, and you could do a storyline strip like Bloom County and Calvin and Hobbes. Because you had a captive audience, right? You subscribed, your reader subscribed to one newspaper. That newspaper presented maybe a dozen, two dozen comic strips, and that's what your reader read. And they probably read them every day. You had a captive audience. And so a story-driven strip could work because they were reading it every day. Are you with me so far?
Okay, yeah.
Now we go into the web, the first couple of years of the web, and that kind of mimics newspapers. We had aggregates that grouped all, like Keen Spot and Modern Tales, grouped all these comics together,
right.
And you could still do that. But as reading got more and more decentralized, right? First, we go from the aggregates to reading strips on individual websites, but that's okay because you've got an RSS reader that aggregates all that stuff for you. In the second place. So we've taken a step away from centralization. And then when RSS dies, we've stepped further away. Now it's just the websites that you've got to follow on your own. Now our readers are getting almost all their content from social media, and it's a very decentralized reading system. And with a decentralized reading landscape, doing a story-driven comic where I've got to know what happened yesterday to get what's going on today, is nearly impossible. Now, that's a comic strip. Does that mean that, Dave, you've got to decide that Drive is impossible or that Evil Inc. is impossible? No, because those aren't comic strips. What we're doing is more akin to a graphic novel that's published on the internet in installments. And if you look at how Dave writes Drive, you see that he knows exactly what I'm talking about, because Drive takes those panels and makes one chunk a significant chunk of reading experience, so that each one of those can kind of stand alone a little bit. Mm-hmm. There's a little bit of something there for the new reader,
right?
But it also works in a greater arc. And so you can do that when you've got more than four panels to work with. But to try to pull that off in four panels in a decentralized reading environment is almost completely impossible. What do you think, Dave Kellett?
Well, I think your point about the decentralized reading environment is something that I had not even considered in the context of this question. And I want to tell you, you're right. So Brad points for that. You get 5 Brad points.
So, yay!
You can turn those in for an ice cream at the end of the show.
I'm contributing.
I'm involved. I think the decentralized aspect is super true and does make it very, very hard to do a story comic strip. I think your delineation between a comic strip and a page-by-page graphic novel, which is more akin to what we're doing, is good. Mm-hmm. I still, however, would disagree with you that a story-based comic strip is not possible online. And so your response will be, well, show me an example. And
okay.
I think actually that our guest from a few weeks back with Check Please is a great example of that. She might mm-hmm. not follow the traditional newspaper format of 4 equally sized peanuts type panels, but she runs it essentially as a strip every time, every update. And I think that's a great example of a plot-based, character arc-based comic strip that just happens.
I don't think that's a strip.
Okay, now, okay, Grandpa,
I
hold on. I'm going to pull up my chair while you take your shoes off to throw it, mate. Go ahead. That was such
it's
a weird
a strip.
Image. What a weird word picture I've just painted.
Your word pictures after the mountain goat got weirder and weirder. No, because when you read an update, it's more like a page or a chunk of a page. It's not a 4-panel strip.
Well, it is a. I'm going to agree with you. It is a page. She updates as a page like we do, but
yeah,
her page, quote unquote, is horizontally based and is usually 3 to 4 panels. So why get off my back, Grandpa? What are you jumping all over me for?
I'm reading those in more than 4 panels. I'm reading those as little episodes that have more than 4 panels, though.
Okay. So here's where I think I will disagree with you, and maybe this will help differentiate it, is that the traditional format of the comic strip of being, let's say, 3 times wider than it is tall, I'm just guesstimating the ratio, that was so delineated by the needs of a newspaper. So once you remove that necessity, you can see that a couple different types of formats still fit under the broader description of comic strip. Now, I will grant you that Drive doesn't fit as a comic strip. That is a comic page that goes into a comic graphic novel. I will agree with you on that.
Right.
Evil Inc. Right. is a comic half page that goes into a comic page that goes into a graphic novel. I will agree with you on that.
Right.
And you could even argue that Check Please is half of a comic page that could go into a double-sized comic. You know, I will agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also an argument that says once you remove the traditional form factor that a newspaper required, that there's a couple of comics that kind of skirt the edge and still fit into the definition of comic strip.
I'd have to agree with you there. But let me reshape what I'm saying. That
okay.
being the case, that the question was, could a story-driven comic like Bloom County do well on the web? That's still a no, because what you've described is nothing like Bloom County. You've got to change it now from the traditional newspaper comic strip, and that's not a bad thing. In fact, that's very freeing. But you do have to think beyond Bloom County as a newspaper style comic strip, right?
Okay. Well, I don't disagree with you, because in my own career, Sheldon, if you look back through the 20 years of archives of Sheldon, you'll see that it started as a comic strip. It was absolutely a comic strip. Now it's a, quote, whatever the hell Dave wants it to be today format,
right?
Quote, you know? And so that kind of, and the reason I did that is because certain jokes work better when they're vertical. Certain jokes work better when they're all color. Certain jokes work better when it's a weird breakup format that mimics a magazine cover. Like, I do whatever the joke requires now, basically, right? Given the space.
Yeah.
So I see what you're saying, that a traditional newspaper comic strip a la Bloom County is going to be a little hard-pressed just because it feels like, why are you forcing yourself into this weird anachronistic format? I see what you're saying. Is that what you're saying? Am I putting words in your mouth?
And not only that, but story is so hard to deliver in four-panel segments, especially if you're doing humor, where you're doing four panels and hitting a punchline, which is the only way you're going to keep readers, because if you're not doing something significant in that fourth panel, you're not going to keep people. But when you're trying to serve two masters like that and hit a punchline and develop a story
in four panels,
it's really, really difficult. And the only thing I'm going to argue, the only thing that made that possible for people like Lynn Johnston, that did for better or for worse, was the fact that she had largely a captive readership.
Yeah.
So she could get away with it. If she was trying to put out for better or for worse as strictly a webcomic, I think even she would have difficulties.
I see what you're saying, because I would agree with you that I think she was probably one of the best masters of the form in terms of creating a compelling story-based comic that was also humorous and beautifully drawn. Like, she checked off a lot of boxes really well. I will agree with you about that. But if she were, you know, transported from 1990 to 2018, you're right that an audience would be less forgiving, because here's what a four-panel strip has to do if it's a story-based comic. First panel, premise. Second panel, tiny advance of the story plot. Third panel, setup for the joke. Fourth panel joke, right? Wouldn't you say, Brad? That's the format.
You've got it exactly right.
And then the worst case format of that is if you do the Spider-Man comic, you do a reiteration of the story from the day before, panel one.
Yep.
Panel two, a slight advance on the story. And by slight, I mean like microscopic. And then panel three would be a tiny forecast of what's going to come tomorrow. And that's what made Spider-Man so frustratingly bad as a comic strip, is like you never went anywhere. It took forever.
Yeah.
And so
ever and ever.
And so I see what you're saying, that a web audience now, having been accustomed to larger, fuller stories that are more complete and frankly holistic in the individual read of that page, would be frustrated, right? Is that what you're saying, by a four panel comic?
Yeah. I was just doing a consultation a couple nights ago with a guy that he's doing exactly this. It's a four panel strip. And he says he's got a 6-year story arc. And it's got this incredibly, and I told him it was a very opaque, obtuse concept. And I said, it's okay for me to say that to you, because I'm the guy that spent 4.5 years doing a comic strip about a comic strip starring a gargoyle that kind of looked like he was drawn like a cat. I'm the master. I get to throw these stones because I spent 4.5 years doing that. And I know what I'm talking about when it comes to obtuse, opaque concepts. And I told this guy the same thing. You're choosing the exact wrong medium to deliver a story that has 6-year arc to it, that has all kinds of really difficult to grasp concepts.
Well, Bradley, you summarized that so perfectly. You've just earned another 5 Brad points.
Yay! What's the top score that I can be shooting for?
If you get up to 20 Brad points, I'll give you 10 minutes of iPad time. So that's great.
Oh, I could use that.
You'll get some iPad time. So all right. So we've answered the Bloom County question. So I wanted to move on. And this is a fun one. This is another one of our $5 questions. But Brad, I want to direct this to you. Bradley J. Geiger of Philadelphia, PA, which of your projects has brought you the most joy and why?
Oh, man. Well, I mean, the easy answer to that would be Evil Inc. After Dark, because it was something that I really kind of surprised myself with. It was something I never thought that I would do. and never thought that I could have so much darn fun doing it and be so challenged over. And so just the sheer surprise that project has brought, probably brought me the most joy out of all the comics that I do. What about you? What's your most joyful comic?
Joyful project? Well, I think I feel the most pride and joy from my word pictures. And so I also call them comics, but no. So as far as purely joy-filled project, I'd have to say Stripped, which is the comics documentary I made a few years back.
Yeah.
And I think part of the reason why that was the most joy-filled was I had worked solitary in a solitary studio for probably 15 years at that point. Mm-hmm. And I started making this documentary with Fred Schroeder, and who I delight in. He's one of my favorite people in the world. We laughed 3-4 years making the movie. It was solid laughter making that film. And we got to travel all around the country and North America. We went up to Canada. We interviewed something like 70 different cartoonists, and it was so fun to talk shop in the studios of cartoonists to see how they worked and why they did what they did and how they got there. And it was like, you know, being able to sit across the table from Jim Davis and Lynn Johnston and Kathy Geiswhite and Dan Peraro, and to have Bill Watterson do the poster for the movie. It was all magical. And that was probably the most pure fun I'll ever have on a project. And so I think the why there explains itself in terms of answering that second part of the question. It was such joy to make that film. And then for me, on my personal level, Drive has been so satisfying to see that I could do a long form story and do it okay enough where enough other people enjoy it as well. So I've been really happy with Drive. I love sitting down to draw that. I love the characters. I love the world building. And so that's incredibly satisfying. But here's a follow-up question that I want to ask you that's not from the $5 questioner. But Brad, how much of your enjoyment of a project, though, is colored by its public success or failure?
Well, listen, it doesn't hurt that Evilink After Dark was successful. But I'm going to answer your question by actually what I was going to talk about next. And that is, if you're including non-comics projects, if I'm talking about joy, I've got to talk about podcasts and being able to do podcasts with you and with Scott. And when we did Webcomics Weekly with Scott and Chris, those were without a doubt some of my most joyful moments. In fact, I can tell you right off the bat, I look forward to Tuesdays at 11 o'clock every week, because I know I'm going to, you know, pop open the microphone, you're going to be on the other end, and we're going to spend an hour or so just laughing and enjoying ourselves. So, is Comic Lab or any of those podcasts, were they super major, you know, quit your day job level successes? No. Yeah, they're very good. I'm very happy with their success, but they're for a show like Comic Lab, it's not so much about the success, so much as it's about just the fact that I know that I'm going to end up laughing my butt off for an hour and really enjoying what happens when we put that show out into the wild and we hear back from people who appreciate what's going on. That's a real source of joy that isn't really monetarily tainted at all, you know?
Yeah, I that's a big high five retweet for me on that one. That's to your preferred phrase, I will co-sign that. That's very true. That really is the old joke of the friends you made along the way. The podcasting is the friends you made along the way. I love talking comics, which is why I love Stripped. But I love talking comics. I love the nuts and bolts of trying to scrap a career together online, and that. It's been so fun to laugh with you week in and week out with this. And so on this, our final show, I just want to say thank you for everybody for having joined us on this journey. It's always funny how at least once a week there's something like, well, it's our last show, and so we thank you for that.
Well, you know, we do need to point out, because it's not typical, as I'm finding out from, you know, just other podcasts I listen to, it's not typical for a show to be able to update week after week after week. And we've been doing two shows a week, and it's already November, and we haven't dropped the ball yet. I'm kind of proud of us. We've done a really solid year's worth of shows, and I'm proud when I look back over the shows we've done. We've done a lot of good topic. We've covered a lot of topics, and we've done a lot of good information sharing. And there's a lot of good there that I like.
Yeah. And to your earlier point, I think one of the reasons why we've been unfailing and missing it is that I genuinely, genuinely love sitting and talking with you for an hour and laughing.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite that you have such a great energy around comics. And anyway, this turned into the friendship hour. I'm sorry about this, everyone. But you get two more minutes of me complimenting Brad. I just think, Brad, you, this, honest to God, this hour brightens my week. I enjoy it.
Well, see, I'm the opposite of you. I could listen to that all day. I'm like a puppy. You scratch my belly, I'll kick my legs, you know. I could listen to this all day.
Well, let's get you in the dentist chair and see how you do. That'll be great.
Yeah. But listen, lest we spend any more time telling each other how much we adore one another, let's do see if we can get another $5 question in here, because I think if I'm looking at our list, we got a really intriguing one to cover next.
Hey, Comics Lab, love the show. I recently lost a backer, who I'm assuming on Patreon, who was asking for advice, help with his work outside the brief of what I offer on Patreon. I tried my best to help him. He backed me for a month, but I quickly realized he wanted me to do the heavy lifting for him. I politely pointed out I could give him pointers, but not do the work. That was his job. He was not polite in his response. He soon pulled his backing, and naturally I feel bad. How do you best deal with follower backers who demand help beyond what is clearly outlined on your page? Brad, I have not experienced this personally, so I'm going to ask this of you. How do you deal with backers who either expected more or demand more outside of the purview of what Patreon is?
Well, I've been very lucky that I haven't experienced it directly either, but I have a very clear-cut opinion on this, and it's kind of the same idea as when somebody wrote me and said, "Oh, every time I mention Patreon on Instagram, I lose a backer." And my opinion there was, good. They did you a favor by removing themselves from your social media.
Yep.
I feel the same way about Patreon. And I know it stings a little bit more when there's a dollar sign attached to it. But this person did you a favor by removing themselves from your Patreon, because they had an expectation that was unrealistic. Now, you've got two ways of handling that. Either politely explain to them that that's an unrealistic expectation, which is what this person did, and risk losing the patron, which is what happened. That's one outcome. Or somehow find a way to meet this person's unrealistic expectation, lose money in the process, because your time is money. So now you're going to do all this extra stuff for this one backer, and they're not going to pay any extra for it, and you're going to end up basically losing money on the deal. How is that a good thing to do extra work for a Patreon backer with unrealistic expectations? That's not a good choice to make. So you made the only choice you could make. You lost the backer, and the fact is you never really had the backer, because this backer had an unrealistic expectation. They were never going to stay a backer for long. So you're going to lose this person sooner or later.
Right.
Thank goodness that they removed themselves from your radar and go forward doing the thing that you do. But don't, if you've got any guilt feelings or anything like that, be rid of them. Don't let that stuff weigh you down. You did nothing wrong.
Yeah, absolutely be rid of those guilt feelings.
That's
easy for Brad and I to say, but we also have had some experience with that. So in terms of like having to back away from a reader of a certain type. And so even though I personally don't have this type of advice-based Patreon problem, I can tell you that the best thing to do is be, at least for me, this is the way I handle it, and Brad can maybe echo that this is how I handle it, is that in public, I am unfailingly polite to the point of like, it's almost painful how polite I am. But then privately in my mind, to me at peace with the issue, I just basically tell them to go eat a bag of dicks. And then that's that. And that's, and Brad can attest to that.
Yes. And yeah, so, there's, you're very polite in social media, but when push comes to shove, you're not a milk toast. You're not a pushover. And at some point, and I've seen this happen, we both sent the reader that very direct message that says, well, we're not going to agree on this. And if you're parting ways, that's for the best and be well.
Yeah. And I wish you well in your journey. That's all you can do in life.
Yeah.
And the longer version of that is that when you are communicating in a mass level, even if we're not a mass level, but communicating to 1,000, 10,000, 100,000 people, not truly mass media, but, you know, you're talking to a lot of people. There's going to be a percentage of, frankly, just weirdos in there and people with weird expectations and weird political opinions and weird ways of interacting with humans. And some of those people, bless them, they're walking a hard road in their life. And so their communication comes out weird or angry or stunted. And so all you can do is just be polite and then personally just be like, well, shine them. I can't, you know, you can't, you can't fix what ails them, at least in a social media sense. So, Brad and I have also seen, too, that trying to win someone over, all that energy in either trying to win an online argument or winning back a patron, you're basically yelling into the wind and you're expending a lot of energy that's, frankly, just best focused on your own creativity. The best answer is to just get back to work. Don't you think, Brad?
Absolutely. And again, why are you stressing out over that backer that wants you to do all of this stuff that you never promised to do? Why are you trying so hard for this person?
Right.
This is a person that that you very easily say, that's not what I'm offering. Now, if you want to take that on as a freelance project, that's your purview if you want to personally do that. But saying no and setting boundaries is just a healthy way to go about life. In general, let alone on Patreon.
Yeah.
So set your boundaries. And by the way, Dave, I went and I checked out because I'm nosy. Newsy, as they say in Philadelphia, not nosy. I'm newsy.
Newsy, as they said in Philadelphia in 1930, Brad. No one said newsy.
Oh, the lady that babysat our kids told me once that I was newsy.
is that a form of gossipy? Is that what that is?
That's you're always spreading news. Oh. You're newsy.
That's gossipy. But, she was saying you were gossipy, not newsy.
Was, believe me, she meant gossipy. She was much too nice to say it to my face. But listen, this is one of those things that I checked out because I like checking. I like knowing the backstory. I looked at this person's Patreon page. This person is being very, very clear on what they are offering. Okay. And there's no questions. There's nothing left to interpretation. It's very clear. This backer was in the wrong. Completely in the wrong, and go about your day. You've done nothing wrong, and you're better off without them. Concentrate on the backers that get what you're trying to do. You're going to do just fine.
Well, you've just been given an official Brad Geiger dispensation.
That's right.
That's basically Brad going, go forth and sin no more, my child. That's you're all set.
Yeah, you know what? Sometimes you need to hear something like that, don't you? Haven't you been in that situation where you go, am I crazy? You know, this person, are they being snarky to me? And sometimes it's nice just to have somebody in almost an authority way say, nah, you're right. They were being a jerk. Be rid of them and go on. You know, sometimes you need a little assurance. And if I can do that for this person, I'm pretty confident I'm making the right call here. I would just give them assurance and move on.
Sure. One of the best pieces of advice I ever heard was sometimes unhappy people in the moment or two slices that they give you of their life, you get a sense of how truly unhappy their 24 hours is in the one or two minutes that you interact with them. And so my additional dispensation is don't absorb their unhappiness into your own daily workflow and your own creativity and your own self-worth. Some people, unfortunately, bless them, just go through life unhappy or angry or aggrieved. And don't let your brief interactions with them color your own mood. You're doing great. Get back to creativity and you'll be fine. Right, Brad?
I think you're absolutely right on that. Well, listen, Dave, we've got one more question on our list today, and I think we got a little time to tackle it. You want to give it a shot?
All right, here we go. Hi, Brad and Dave. I'm still catching up on old podcasts. Sorry if this was covered. Well, first of all, we're going to talk about this. Catch up, because we have had so many breaking news pieces on this podcast. You'll be amazed at how much you've
missed. Oh, my God, yes.
Okay, here we go. I'm working on a new project and hope to launch in the next 6 months to 1 year. Should I launch with a Patreon page immediately? Or, Brad, should I give it a few months to make sure the comic will succeed before spending the time on crowdfunding?
Ooh.
Now, there's a second part to this question, so hold on to that one. It says, okay. Aforementioned project is also proving to be an organizational challenge. I have to do character development, world building, story and script writing, concept art, drawing pages, not to mention website development. How do I prioritize and what do I prioritize? Thanks. So basically, I wanted to read both of those parts because I feel like we might be able to tackle them together. The bigger question here, Brad, is how does somebody start, right? That's the big underlying question. What's the best way to start? So I turn it to my master of ceremonies and master of advice, Brad Geiger. How does somebody start?
Well, I think this is good all-purpose advice, and that is when you're starting anything new, and particularly, now this person, I think, has a little bit of experience doing comics. This isn't his first comic, but this is especially true for you if you're not, if this is your very first comic and you're just starting out. But it also applies equally, and that is concentrate on the comic. In the first, I'm going to say 6 months to a year, just concentrate on doing the comic and making the comic good.
Yep.
And you can indulge in a little bit of social media to get some promotion out and do all of those other things to a small extent, because your focus it's hard to do a good comic. It's difficult to pull this stuff off. And you're going to be doing it for the love of doing it for the first few months, and it's going to feel like nobody's reading. That's not important either. You need to be concentrate 100% laser focus on doing the comic. And then after 6 months or 9 months or so, when you really kind of establish a pattern and a groove and you really feel confident about knowing what you're doing, then I think you can start to up your social media output a little bit more. You can start to concentrate on some of these things. And after like the 1 year mark or so, you can launch a Patreon. I've always said that Patreon is not a place to build a audience. It's a place to take the audience you've built so that you can monetize that audience. If you're starting out a comic, I think Patreon should not be a priority. I think there's plenty of time for that after you've actually seen if you can do this thing. And I'm just going to put a little button on that, and then I want to hear what you have to say, Dave, because I think, and I see this happening time and time again, the biggest hurdle that most web cartoonists have in launching and doing their comic isn't the comic itself. It's trying to do the comic and social media and what they think they need to do for publishing. And if they go to comic conventions and Patreon and all this other stuff, they spread themselves too thin. And in trying to do everything, they do nothing. And what I want a new cartoonist to do, or somebody that's launching a new project, I would much rather see that person spend 100% of their time working on the comic. And once that's going smoothly, then start to build this other stuff. If you try to do it all at once, especially in the beginning, you're going to hurt yourself because you can't do it all at the same time. Believe me. It's hard to do all this stuff, and for people that are in a regular routine, it's very difficult, especially right now, Dave. What, the holidays? Are you kidding me? I consider myself really good at time management. I'm failing miserably right now. What do you think, Dave? Would you hold off on a Patreon, or would you jump right in?
Well, because I think your advice is so rock solid there, I actually want to ask you a building question on your points, because I co-sign and high-five retweet all of that. So here's my follow-up question to that, though, is that I agree that they should focus 6 months or more on just doing the comic, just really enjoying and getting into the comic, make sure it's working, make sure the audience is connecting, all that sort of stuff. Make sure your techniques are working, your writing techniques, your drawing techniques, make sure it's all clicking together and to make the best comic you can. I totally agree with that. But here is my follow-up question to you. Where do they put it? Should they take a week or two and build a basic website with hosting? Should they just start on Instagram, Facebook, Reddit, Twitter, and Tumblr? Should they just put up a Tumblr page and link everything to that? Where do you think is the lowest hanging fruit so that they don't spend a lot of time, but they still get enough of an audience build while they're doing that 6 months of initial comic work?
Woof. Boy, I'm going to show my age. I still like the hub website idea. I don't know that I would like my, I don't know that I would suggest them doing it strictly on social media, like strictly on Twitter or strictly on Facebook. And Tumblr is perfectly fine, but that's basically a variation of the hub website. And Line, you got to put in Line Webtoons there too. I would say my first blush would be a website of your own, with a close second being Lion Webtoons, just because there's such a built-in comics reading audience there that I would be tempted, if I were starting something brand new, I'd be, and I didn't have any, like if I hadn't been doing this for a long time and I didn't have the things in place I've got now, I would be looking at Lion Webtoons. Even above Facebook or Twitter, it would be a website, number one. And then if that wasn't a good fit, I would be putting that thing out online, Webtoons.
So my answer was going to be like, just do the low-hanging fruit and put it up on Twitter, on Instagram, on Reddit, on Tumblr, all the easy social media access points, right? That was going to be my answer. But then I realized that you still want to have... okay, so in those 6 months period, you're going to have people that like really latch onto your style or like where you're going with this or appreciate and want to read more. And you are still going to need that hub website. So I'm going to change my the idea I formulated in my mind, and I'm going to agree with Brad that I think you still want a bare bones website, or worst case scenario, a bare bones Tumblr that you can point everybody to. And the reason why you'd want a bare bones Tumblr is just that it has the full archive up there, and you can at a certain point really, you know, for a week, focus on directing everybody to your new website that you've just built. And so everybody forget about this Tumblr. I'm over on this website, that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But I agree with Brad that you'll probably want to get a basic website going. And it can be a no frills thing. Just put the archive engine up and the comics themselves and good to go. You don't need blogging. You don't need anything else. I mean, maybe you want blogging, but, I think, Brad, you're right. Boy, a lot of Brad points being earned today. We're up to like 20 Brad points.
I was going to say, I've got to have my iPad time by now.
Yeah, you've definitely earned some iPad time. I'm fascinated to see if you're going to read or if you're going to download a new app for yourself.
Oh, it's going to be nothing but Tetris all the whole time, Tetris.
Happy loves his Tetris. So I think in general, though, we would agree for this person, like, definitely don't focus on anything merch.
Yeah.
Definitely don't focus on anything Patreon or Kickstarter or anything money-wise. Don't put the money at the back of your mind.
Right.
Keeping in mind, as Brad always says, this is a marathon, not a sprint. You're not going to make any money probably for the first couple years, if we're being honest about it.
Right.
And so take those first 6 to 12 months and just be a building and focusing time on your comic. Is that a good summary, Brad?
Yep, absolutely. And it also kind of leads us into the second part of this guy's question, because he says he's got a lot of stuff, a lot of organizational challenges, character development, world building, story and script writing, concept art, blah, 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 blah. What do I prioritize? I think you prioritize story above all else. And in other words, world building kind of factors into that. The story is the most important thing. And if I were to make any of those things a priority, it would be writing the story and then rewriting it and then editing it and then rewriting it. World building is great, but world building leads to a good story, but it's not a good story.
Right. It's the icing on the cake. Yeah.
Yeah. And I see a lot of writers getting very, very bogged down in world building. And it's great to have a very defined world that you're working in. Like Drive, I can tell you spent a lot of time world building. But there, and you, that's evident when you read it. But there came a time, I'm sure, when you switched over to story, that didn't mean your world building was over, but you had done enough world building to have a framework to hang your story against, and then you started writing. Is that accurate?
Well, I'm gonna actually take that in a different tack, which is take this from someone who has done a lot of world building with Drive, and I think pretty successfully. Mm-hmm. You can come up with world building on the fly later on. You can shoehorn things in. Don't worry so much about world building. Make your characters compelling. Make their story compelling. Make their crisis compelling. And then, honest to God, if you're a creative person, you can fit world building in whatever way you need to make it fit. You know, remember, it's your story. It's not like there's a fixed set of events. You can move dates around. You can move empires around. You can move peoples around. And so your world building can be molded to fit whatever the story is and what it needs. So,
and every now and again, you're going to get into a corner, and that's good, too. Like, you're going to say, oh, geez, if I would have done more world building, I wouldn't have written myself into this corner. Now I got to explain why this thing happened. That's a good writing challenge. Take that on with gusto.
Let me give you an example of that, Brad.
Yeah.
So there was a period in Drive where I said, like, there was three emperors between this one emperor and another one, right? And so that was a fixed fact in the story that I couldn't change once I had said it. But then I looked back in my timelines and I was like, oh, God, that's not a lot of time for those three emperors to have lived. So you know what I did? I made it so that they're a very genocidal family and kill one another very quickly, like the Italians in the medieval times. And so the average reign was like 6 to 18 months for a while there, because someone would get into on the throne and then they'd get poisoned. And so it makes it a more compelling story, because I had to shoehorn in three emperors into a 4-year period. Well, okay, they were all killing each other. That's what they were doing. So, and that's what Brad's talking about.
And instead of getting upset with yourself, you took that on.
Yeah,
you took that as a challenge.
Exactly. So having painted myself into a corner, I go, oh, shit, well, they all killed each other. That's what they did. All right. And so you'll find that that's true with your storytelling, too, is that if the story is compelling enough, people will have enough hand wavium for whatever plot device or story device or background world building you need to do to make it work. Right, Brad?
Yes. Yes. And everything that you've listed here, nothing is as important as the story. Character development, well, that's going to come out through your story. But concept art, not as important. Drawing pages, not as important. Website development, what do you need in a website? We've kind of got the basics down. It doesn't need to be a lot more than your typical webcomics site. With a couple tweaks to make sure that you're not doing kind of old school webcomics website design.
Right.
But you don't need a lot there either. The main thing you got to do, and the thing that's going to either make your comic go forward or it's going to kill it dead in the water, is the story. So spend all of your time on the story. And then meter out your time after that. Once you're confident you've got a good story, then you start to work on some of this other stuff.
And you know, we've said story a couple times working on the thing or working on the initial thrust of the project. But I will say one other thing, which is, it's actually a 1-2 punch. When you're working on the story, you're telling a story both with words and pictures. So I would actually put character design and world design, the look of your comic, kind of up there with story design. Maybe Brad would disagree with me, but I think if you're going to focus on two things, work on your writing and work on your drawing is the short version. Work on the story and work on the character designs and the world design.
I'd go along with that. Truthfully, a lot of times the way your character looks might help codify in your mind who that character is and might make certain things kind of come alive to you. So maybe not in a total, you know, slavish devotion to story, just do story. But Dave makes a really good point. Spend a little time on the look too, but I will say this, story is your priority.
Yeah. Because I'm going to point counterpoint myself here and say,
yeah,
people will read a well-written story that's kind of so-so drawn. They won't read a terribly written story that's beautifully drawn.
Yep. And the one thing you haven't mentioned there is lettering. And I just will slide this in. If they can't read it, they're not going to read it.
Hey-o. that worked really well.
yeah. Lettering is something that we overlook all the time, and I'm telling you, that's the reason that a lot of people drop away from your comic, or in general, not yours, Dave, but our comics is lettering.
Yeah, and here's the good news for that, though. We live in a world where 20, 30 years ago, you would have been screwed if you had terrible lettering. Now we have amazing comics fonts, a little bit of investment, a little bit of time. You can have a beautifully lettered and laid out word system in your comic with very little effort.
Absolutely. Well, listen, Dave, I think we've said it all once again.
We've said it all. We'll see you again next week to say it all once more time.
I don't think we could add anything more to that other than to say that you've been listening to Comic Lab, the show about making comics and making a living from comics.
Your hosts have been the delightful Brad Geiger, the editor of webcomics.com and the cartoonist of Evil Inc. at evil-comic.com.
And the avuncular Dave Kellett, the co-director of Stripped and the cartoonist of Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com and Drive at drivecomic.com.
The Comic Lab theme song is used with permission from Andy Creighton at theworldrecord.net. And this episode was edited by Matt Woodard of Woodsong Productions at www.woodsong.media.
Comic Lab is made possible by your support on patreon.com/comiclab. So we'll go ahead and say that again. Patreon.com/comiclab.
Did I lose you? What happened?
No, I just stopped my talking.
Oh, God. All right, well, we're editing that out because that was awkward as hell. I thought you were going to keep going.